I'm Jacob and I'm an addict. Can you hear me all right? So I guess a little bit about myself. My name is Jacob Draben. I was born in Savannah, Georgia, August 19th, 1980. My dad was in the Army. So pretty much it was me and my mom most of the time. He wasn't there a lot. He was an alcoholic. I didn't know it at the time, but you know, he was kind of violent with my mom, you know, and, I guess when I was around 2-3 years old or something like that, you know, he beat my mom up pretty good. My mom decided to leave him, took me with her, and, they got a divorce and we moved up to, Whitehaven, Pennsylvania, where my grandparents were at, and we moved in with my grandparents. You know, I was a rebel without a cause from the very start. You know, it seemed like, so my father figure was gone and I had lost like all, I didn't trust any men, period, you know? And when I say I was a rebel without a cause from the, like, really young, like, I mean, that's exactly what it was. Like, I remember one time, like, my mom, told me that I couldn't wear this Nike shirt that I wanted to wear because it was wet. And I decided to get on my bike and drive all the way across town. And they found me. I was trying to jump on a train, to get the hell out of Dodge. You know what I mean? Like, I was pretty bad. My mom was gone a lot. She was at work a lot. You know, she did her absolute best to take care of me. But like, being that it was like only me and her, she was gone a lot because she had to provide some kind of living, you know, for us. So, after a few years, my mom decided that she wanted to kind of start over, and I had an aunt and uncle who lived in Virginia Beach. So we made our way down to Virginia Beach. At first, you know, we moved into, it was a pretty bad neighborhood. The name of our street was literally named Gun Hall. And it was a pretty nasty place. My cousins, my two little girl cousins, lived right down the street from us. You know, I only had like one friend in the neighborhood. You know, I was at home by myself a lot because my mom was at work a lot. And, you know, I remember my cousin Carrie coming up to my house one day to hang out with me. And I had this neighbor who was like, he was hell on wheels, just like me, but like in a different way. You know, he would like torture the neighbors' animals and stuff. I mean, he was a really bad kid. And I heard my cousin screamed from the front yard. I looked out the window and he had busted this bottle, and he was standing between my house and my little cousin, with this broken bottle, like he was going to cut her. And I came, had one of those souvenir baseball bats and came around the back side of my house and clunked him in the head. And, you know, I thought I killed him. My neighbor friend, I went and I got him from across the street, and I remember standing there in my front yard, looking up there at my buddy and his rat tail, and we're two kids standing out there with like no shirt on and these camouflage pants. And we thought this kid was dead. So, we grabbed him by the feet and we dragged him across the street into the woods and tossed him in a creek. And he woke up as soon as he hit the water. You know, I was completely out of control, when I was younger, and my mom had no idea like what to do. So shortly after that, she met my stepdad. My stepdad was in the Navy. He was a really good guy, but like I said, like I lost like all trust for men in my life, you know? So like here I am like 7-8 years old, maybe 9 or something. And, my mom meets this guy and I can't stand him. Like I literally can't stand him. If they're walking, holding hands, I'm running up between them and I'm grabbing their hands and pulling them apart and throwing them back at them. Standing in the middle, didn't like him so much that like I was the ring bearer in their wedding, and while they were saying their vows, I took the ring box and I put it behind my back and I took the ring out and I just put it on my pointer finger. And, when the priest asked for the ring box to hold out for my dad to take the ring out, you know, he opened it up and it was just like an empty box, you know. My mom was like, she had to pull me to the side and tell me to give her the ring and stuff. So, you know, I still didn't like him. We moved in over there, at a different part of Virginia Beach, over there to his house. And like, and times got pretty good, you know. He was still in the Navy, so he was gone a lot. But, you know, he loved me and he treated me like a son, like a little man, like I wanted to be treated. And, but I was never hearing any of it. I played a lot of sports. I would have never imagined that, you know, my life would have turned the way that it did. So my dad retired and we moved to North Carolina, in the middle of my freshman year. And when I got to North Carolina, it was like, I didn't really fit in. I kind of kept to myself. There was one thing I was good at doing, and it was like acting out, you know, and being a real badass. So in North Carolina, I found a quick way to fit in, you know, and get people to accept me was to act like an asshole, because it got attention and I started doing drugs. You know, at first I just like started smoking weed, drinking a little bit, and then it like progressed. And like from the point that I started like doing drugs, like now that I look back at it, the progression was just crazy, out of control. Like shortly after, you know, I was doing a lot of acid, I mean, everything. And, so I got expelled from school, because like back then they didn't have truancy, you know, it was like your parents couldn't get in trouble and catch like legal cases if you didn't go to school. So, you know, I got expelled from school and I went and I got a job, at Boston Market. I only worked there for like 2 weeks because me and a coworker, we got high and went up on the roof and started throwing cornbread at the restaurant next door at the people who were like waiting in line. So I got fired from that job. And then I decided I was going to try to go back to school. And like, you know, I figured, you know, I was making this resolution, like I was going to stop doing drugs and I was going to go to school and try. Well, I was such a badass in school. They literally called my house the morning of the first day of school and said I was not allowed back in that school until my parents met with the school board. So right then, that was enough for me to say, well, fuck this. You know, I'm pretty much done with this shit. And I went right back to doing the same thing I was doing. And, you know, things just started getting worse and worse and worse. So I ended up getting expelled again. And my family got a, you know, my dad transferred. So we moved back to Richmond, Virginia. And in Richmond, I just took off. I mean, to be honest, like I was good at drugs, you know. I know that's a crazy thing to say, but I was, you know. And, you know, I got there and I started getting this mentality like, you know, why am I going to pay for something that I want when I could just get more and turn around and sell it and, you know, and get it for free. So I had a job, you know, I lost that job, almost died in the ocean. My friends, my cousin and everybody found me out in the ocean one night after taking some stupid raid drugs. And I was with my friend's pit bull and we were just trying to pull in this piece of driftwood and the tide was coming in and I was all blocked in and it was a crazy experience. And, so like, you know, my life was like consumed by drugs, but I never like really saw myself as like an addict. You know, I was still pretty young. Shortly after, you know, my friend, long story short, like, you know, one of my friends ended up dying over a bad drug deal. He got shot in the back, like right in front of me. And, I had gotten in a really bad car wreck and so my mom called me. My parents had moved down here to Texas a couple of years before, you know, and my mom tells me, she's like, you know, you need to come down here to Texas and get up, you know, get out of Virginia before you end up dead or before you end up in jail forever. And so I figured, okay, you know, I can relocate. I can change my scenery, change where I live at, start over. So I got a whole bunch of weed and I drove down here to Texas. Well, I was in Texas for like, just a few days, and there was a neighbor of mine and I was smoking some weed with him, and he asked me, he said, man, when are you going to do your time? And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, man, here in Texas, if you have anything to do with drugs at all, you're going to do some kind of time. And I was like, you're fucking crazy, man. So I continued doing what I was doing. Never realized that I was an addict. You know, I figured I just had a rough childhood. You know what I mean? And like, that was the cards that I was dealt. You know what I mean? Like I just got dealt a worse hand than somebody else. So, you know, I had a good job. I met my baby's mother. She was an addict. I was an addict. She got pregnant. I was like, great idea. You know, we're going to have a baby. I had a decent job. After my daughter was born, I got a DUI. You know, things just weren't working out between me and her mom. And I started drinking like real heavy. You know, I was like polishing off like a bottle of Crown every day. And, you know, I was just staying obliterated and wasted. And I got a pretty nasty DUI, over at like Dessau and Howard, to the point where this was my first like big blackout, you know. It was horrible. I got out of the cop car twice. Cops had to chase me down. They put me in shackles. I'm talking all this shit to the cops and, told them that I was diabetic. So maybe I didn't have to go to jail. They took me by Brackenridge, checked on my blood sugar and everything. And, you know, I was so obliterated when I bonded out of jail. I called a lawyer and I said, listen, man, I said, you know, I didn't take any kind of sobriety test, field sobriety. It should be an open and closed case. I should be able to beat this. He was like, all right. I honestly didn't remember any of that stuff. You know, he literally called me like 3 or 4 days later and he said, Jacob, what the hell is wrong with you? And I was like, what do you mean? He said, this has got to be one of the craziest DUI tapes I've ever seen. He said, do you remember getting out of the cop car twice? And I'm like, no. He's like, do you remember telling the cops to like pull their car over on the way downtown and put their badge and their gun on their trunk and that you would whoop their asses all over the parking lot? I'm like, no, man, I didn't remember any of that. So of course I came out of that situation, like feeling like, okay, I'm never going to drink anymore. I'm going to stop doing drugs. Well, it just didn't happen. You know, life keeps on happening. And that was my way to like numbing out. And so like, as these bad things are happening in my life, the way I look at them now is like every time something bad happened, it was like I was putting another brick on this wall, you know, on this wall that just kind of shut me in and didn't allow me to see like the horizon, didn't allow me to see like past what is going on like right now and like what life is all like really about, you know? And it seems like every time like I have like the consequences to one of those actions, I don't know, like it knocked a brick off the wall or something like that, you know, and I get this little glimpse and what I wanted life to be like, you know? So, fast forward a little bit and me and my baby's mother, we split up and, she ended up going to state jail. And so I had custody of my daughter and, you know, I started doing more drugs, you know? I started doing a lot of coke and then that turned to meth. And, you know, I think back and, you know, it really sucks because, you know, like my daughter was like 2 years old and, you know, I'm in the back room, you know, doing dope and there's a gun under every cushion in my couch because, you know, in my house because I'm paranoid. And, you know, shortly after that, CPS got involved. CPS came to my house. They wanted me to take a drug test. And I'm like, no, fuck you. I'm not taking any drug tests. So my daughter went to go stay with my mom. And, I guess I was about 23 then, you know, and, you know, it hurt a lot that my daughter went to stay with my mom, but to be honest, like I numbed it with drugs. And once she went to go stay with my mom, I was like so far into drugs, like they engulfed my entire life. I kind of felt like a sense of freedom, you know, it's a shitty thing to think back about, but like, I mean, that's really like what it was. And so I just twisted off real hard, man. I ended up getting in trouble. You know, of course I got put under investigation. The cops caught me with like, it was like 4 ounces of dope, you know, a couple pistols and, you know, I ended up getting charged with 2 first-degree felonies, you know, and then some misdemeanors, and I wasn't a felon yet, so like the guns were still a misdemeanor. And I'm sitting in Williamson County thinking like, this is my first time ever being in trouble, really, you know, for anything heavy, and surely I'm going to get probation. I'm sitting in Williamson County, and I'm making all these plans how I'm going to get out and how I'm going to go, like, cook off a batch of dope, you know, and get out on bond, and then I'm going to cook some dope, and I'm going to pay off my lawyer, and I'm going to pay off this probation, because surely I'm going to get probation. And the judge of Williamson County said no to probation, no to rehab, and he gave me 10 years in TDC. And that was at the end of 2004. So I went away, and I did 5 years in prison, which sucked, you know. I got a lot of PTSD and some shit from that. And like, so I got out in 2010, and I thought that I had this whole thing under control. I was like, you know, no more dope, no more drugs, but it's okay for me to drink. This is where I can really start identifying with like being an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Because, alcohol will lead me to other things. Like anytime I'm drunk, anything is a great idea. You know, so it wasn't long before, you know, I walked by a room and saw somebody doing some blow, you know, when I was drunk. And I was like, wow, that's a great way to wake up. So, you know, I started doing that. And then it's progressive. Like this meth thing is like, you know, it's the real deal, man. You know, this addiction is crazy. So, you know, shortly after that, I get back into this drug dealer mentality. I lose my job. I had a good job. You know, when things were going good, I had started building my credit back up. And then I got my door kicked in by the ATF. I was driving on my way to work one day, and they pulled me over, you know, while my truck was still in gear, pulled me out, threw me in the back of an SUV. One of them jumped in my truck and drove my truck, and we followed my truck back to my house. They parked my truck in front of my house, and my poor roommate was already outside, you know, in handcuffs, in his underwear and his sleep mask still on. They had a big black brake truck parked up there by my door. Door was blown off the hinges. So, you know, none of this stuff was ever enough. You know what I mean? Like, this addiction is really something serious. Like, I was controlled in every aspect of my life by this addiction. Then I fast forward like a couple of years. And it's like, you know, I think I have all these great ideas when I'm out there, you know, and I think that like, with every mistake, I'm going to learn from it. I'm like, yeah, I'm fucking smart. I'm not going to do this anymore, you know, or I'm going to do it this way. That way the laws can't catch me. And then, in about 2016 or 2017, I was driving down Mopac. I'd been up for a couple of days, and, you know, I was going 80 miles an hour, and I fell asleep, smashed into the back of a trash truck that was parked on Mopac. I was in a coma for 3 days. I had 13 broken bones. My foot, my leg, my hand, my wrist, like 3 broken bones here. My whole sinus cavity was shattered. Broken clavicle, compressed C5. And in my L3, I had 2 fractures in the back of my L3. And so they didn't think I'd walk again for at least a couple of years if I did. And, so that I was there at the hospital, and it was like, I came out of the coma, and I won't even get into this, but I had like one of those moments in the coma that I remembered. But when I came to, so many people were there, you know, I'm pretty sure that like, you know, the only reason that I'm alive today was like, of course, my higher power, but like all the positive energy from like all these people who came to like wish me, you know, wish me well in the hospital. And, they hadn't told me that I wouldn't walk again yet. I had to get in like a full fledged like back brace that I had to wear for like 6 or 8 months. But to be honest, my will to live was in drugs. They didn't control me that much. You know, I didn't even think about anything other than like getting out of that hospital, and I wanted to walk so I could like do drugs and sell more drugs. So in a way, you know, it's a fucked up thing to say, but like in a way, like my addiction kind of kept me alive for, you know, I don't know. It's crazy. So that wasn't enough. I didn't even have one of those moments where like I had like this I didn't even have one of those moments to where like I had this resolution where I wasn't going to do that anymore. Like I just wanted to get out and get high. So, you know, all these times in my life, it's like all these times, like my higher power is showing up and I don't even acknowledge it, you know, and I don't even realize it. So at the beginning of 2019, the DEA had been watching me for a little while because I jumped back in like head first and I hit the ground running, you know, with drugs and stuff. And at the beginning of 2019, the DEA busted me again. And this time I had like 33 ounces of meth. I had like 8 or 9 ounces of coke, a whole bunch of Xanax. I mean, like, you know, a brand new Colt 45, you know, all this stuff. And I ended up with, 4 first degree felonies and some misdemeanors. And, you know, 3 of the first degree felonies got enhanced. I got a real good lawyer. He took all the rest of my guns. He took all the money that I had. He took like my drones, anything that I had of value, you know, to get me out. I had used them in a couple other cases that he had like beaten for me. And, so I got out and I'm still out like on $325,000 bond. They put 2 ankle monitors on me and the condition of my bond was that I do some sort of inpatient treatment. So 7 months went by, you know, they let me out on $325,000 bond, put 2 ankle monitors on me. I had to pay $640 a month to have them on. They labeled me a drug dealer and turned me back out on the streets. And I don't know how the fuck I'm going to pay $640 a month without selling drugs. You know, I didn't have a job. So I got right back into things and I hit it hard and I just, you know, tried to follow my curfew. You know, I talked my way out of 2 rehabs. I went to 1 rehab down there in Corpus and, smooth talked my way out of it. Then I got accepted to, Christian Farms up there in Temple. I showed up at Christian Farms. You know, I just wasn't ready. You know, I had my watch on that had its own SIM card. So like, you know, they allowed me to have my watch in there. I'm like walking around the track, talking on my watch with my hands up like this. Everybody thinks that I'm just a nutcase because I'm trying to like avoid people seeing that I'm talking on the phone through my watch. Talked my way out of that. And then, I got a bed there at Austin Recovery on December 26th. So, I fought it all the way up until like literally my girlfriend had to tell me like, man, I'm leaving here without you. Because I'm like, no, don't leave me. No, don't leave me. I'm sitting there in the waiting room at Austin Recovery and I'm like, you know, no fucking way, no fucking way. You know, I can't do this. I can't do this. You know, I'm just going to go change my identity, move states. You know, I had all these bright ideas on what I was going to do. I was never honest with myself. I never really wanted to admit the fact that like I was an addict and that my life was controlled by fucking drugs, man. So I sat there in Austin Recovery in the waiting room. Another guy came in, who I actually knew from out here in the streets. And I just wasn't ready. You know, I kept standing up in these meetings. So I, you know, figured whatever, my girlfriend's going to leave me here anyway. I might as well at least stay here for a couple of days so I can figure out a way to talk my way out of it. You know, I'm in there. I'm listening to Gates, 12-step workshops and shit like that. And it's like, I'll be honest, you know, I'm not trying to hear none of it. It kind of sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher for a little bit. You know, I'm standing up in meetings, you know, 3 or 4 times, you know, guys had to stop me. I had my shit packed. I was trying to walk out on the road. I'm like, listen, man, this is never going to work for me. This is never going to work for me. I'm making myself unique. I'm like, I'm not this kind of addict. Never stole my neighbor's lawnmower and helped him look for it throughout the neighborhood. I said, I hope this works for you guys, but it's not going to work for me. So from like the first day that I was there, I had checked in and I was sitting there in the dorm and somebody who looked familiar came walking up. She came walking up real fucking fast, you know, had her fucking thing around her neck and, her awesome recovery thing, and she came and she sat down next to me, and I looked at her, and it was Elizabeth, right? And she looked at me and she said, "Man," she said, "I'm so glad you're here. I saw you on the roster." And I'm like, "No fucking way." So like a little bit of history with me and Elizabeth, you know, I'm sorry for putting you out there like this. You know, I used to be a drug dealer. I was a drug dealer for a long time. And I knew she had gotten sober. And she came and she had like tears in her eyes, you know? So this was another time where like I was going to leave, but like my higher power is showing up. You know what I mean? These are the things that like, that my higher power put in place for me to give this a chance, you know? And I still wasn't really willing to give it a chance. I was willing to be there and present, but I really wasn't willing to think about it and try to do any fucking steps or try to do any more work. You know, here I am. I'm in my mind. I'm trying to figure out a way how to get myself out of these legal troubles and not back in prison for the rest of my life. And another way my higher power showed up, it's like I got put in this room, you know, with another dude, and I was there for a day, and I go into the room the next day that I was there because he was sleeping most of the first day. And I took my shirt off, and my roommate says, I keep on wanting to call him my Sally, because he's like, "Hey, listen, he's like, "Hey man, where did you get that tattoo on your arm?" And I'm like, "What? What the fuck do you want to know for?" And he's like, "Man," he said, "were you in Williamson County in like 10, 15 years ago?" I said, "Yeah, it's been a long time, man. You know, it was like 2004. He said, "Yeah, man." He said, "I think I drew that tattoo that's on the back of your arm." And I looked at him and I said, "No fucking way, man." And it was a guy who I was locked up with in Williamson County in 2004, you know, and like, you know, I probably wouldn't have stayed. I mean, I wouldn't have given this thing a chance. It's like my higher power is showing up and he's putting these things in place. And these are like, these are little things. And the things that I think back now, I mean, you know, these are reasons that I stayed. So, you know, I cried for like a week, you know, poor me, poor me, poor me. Can't really share at meetings because I start crying because it's like, you know, none of you motherfuckers really understand what the fuck I'm going through. I got these two fucking monitors on my legs. I don't know what it's like to really fucking, you know, my counselors are asking me like, what am I like when I'm coming off of dope? And I'm like, man, I don't really know because I have not been coming off of dope for like almost 20 years now. I literally wake up high and I go to sleep high. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I get up and get high so I can wake up high. I mean, it was a crazy fucking thing. And I'm like, you know, I really don't know. And I'm making myself unique. And, you know, really when I took a good look at it, it was like, when I get down to the root of it, the bottom line is like, once I start, like I don't stop. And like, I could not stop starting. If I take away all the other bullshit, all the other materialistic, you know, bullshit that I'm looking at and just put some dope down in front of me, just like the next man, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it till it's gone. So, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm trying to figure out this fucking higher power thing, you know? And so this is what happened with me. And, you know, I had one of these ah moments out there, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm really mad at this other dude who I'm in the dorm with. So mad that I had asked my buddy in the kitchen to get me some rubber gloves, and I got these rubber gloves in my pocket so I could punch this dude out, and I didn't want to get blood on me. And one of the RCS is there. He's like, "What's going on?" I'm like, "Man, this dude has really got me out of my recovery mind state. I'm back in this like prison mind state, and I'm going to knock his fucking block off." He's like, "Well, don't do that. Go take a walk, man, and ask your higher power." And I'm like, you know, I'm a grown ass man. I don't fucking ask my higher power for shit. I've been controlling my own life into the fucking ground for a long time. So I listened to what he says, and I took a walk, and I walked back on those trails, and I walked all the way back, and I was looking at 45 at the toll road, and I was about to just leave everything there, and I was just about to walk out onto the toll road, wave somebody down and ask them to use their phone. And so for the first time, and I guess this is a foxhole prayer too, because, you know, previous in my life, like the only time that I ever really prayed was like when I was in like a life or death situation. So I guess this is really like another foxhole prayer, but I'm like, you know, I'm out there crying in this field on these trails. And I'm like, man, God, you got to show me a sign, you know? And I turn around and it's like, I'm bawling my eyes out there, and this rattlesnake crawls out into the path, like right in front of me. It was just a little baby rattlesnake, and I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me, and it's like I knew it was a sign from my higher power. I knew that, like, this snake wanted to block me from my path back to the recovery center, and I knew that the wrong choice for me to do was going to be to walk out on the 45. So I waited for the little rattlesnake to move, and I came back, and the dude who I was having an issue with, instead of punching him out, I reached out and I hugged him. You know, I saw what it did to, like, the people in the dorm. They came up to me and they were like, man, that was really an awesome thing. You know, there was a lot of tension in here. So I started giving it a chance, man. I realized that the things that, that Chris was suggesting I could do, and that my sponsor was suggesting that I could do. 'Cause, like, in the midst of all this, I went to, like, one of the speaker meetings, and my sponsor, who's now my sponsor, you know, he just introduced me, and he was like, yeah, man, sounds like you got a pretty fucked up thing going on, man. He was like, you got a sponsor? And I was like, no. He was like, you do now. And he's a no nonsense dude, you know? So, you know, throughout all that, you know, I start doing what they tell me. You know, he told me he's right after I had this, like, aha moment, like, I found out one of my really good friends died. She OD'd, and my counselor had to tell me, and she was a really good friend of mine for a long time. My girlfriend was struggling, you know, she's a normal person. She's back here at the house. She's struggling, you know, with a lot, because she doesn't really understand addiction, you know, and, like, this mental obsession behind it. You know, I did something that I never would have done, and this is my higher power showing up again. It's like, you know, my counselor, Ted, told me, he said, I want you to give me at least 10 days. I told him, I said, listen, man, I said, I got to leave and go talk to my girlfriend. He's like, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. I'm like, listen, man, I'll take a drug test now. I'll take a drug test when I get back. I know it's, like, against protocol and everything like that. And so they gave me 4 hours. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but they did. And I left there, and I took my girlfriend to a meeting. It helped her. It helped me. I did something that I never would have done before, you know, and I came back. And so, like, you know, with all that being said, you know, I completed the program. I went through a lot of shit while I was there. I had this moment where I found out, I figured out, like, my higher power really did show up, you know. And so, you know, even with these monitors on my legs and everything, and dealing with everything that I'm dealing with, I start trying to live a different way. And I did what they said, you know, like, I hit the ground running. I stayed in the center of the herd so I don't get picked off. I did shit that didn't make me, you know, that made me uncomfortable. And it's like, you know, I wear this shit almost like a badge of honor, you know, like, when I say, like, I recover out loud. So, like, somebody doesn't have to fucking die in silence. You know what I mean? Am I almost at time right now? So, you know, I jump right into service work, you know, all this shit. And I'm not sure, like, if I need to do all this shit in order to stay sober, but I'm not really willing to risk my sobriety. So, like, I start living this different way, and things start happening for me, man. You know what I mean? I realized it was never really the drugs and alcohol. It was my own fucked up way of thinking. You know, I never really wanted to admit that I had a fucking disease. Nobody really wants to admit that. You know, nobody ever gave me a sign that said, hey, man, you have an addict. You're an addict, and you fucking have this way of thinking about, you know, going about things. It's, like, way different than anybody else. So, you know, I got educated. You know, they taught me some shit about, like, what the addict mind is like and how this circular fucking pattern of addiction is. And these days, you know, I try to give everything over to my higher power. My self-will is still good when it's aligned with my higher power's will. You know, and so I try to get out of myself. I try to do things for, like, you know, for the next person. I try to answer my phone when somebody calls. Like, I have to check my motives all day, every day. Like, if it's not recovery related, then I don't have any business doing it. And, you know, with all that being said, you know, I got a job. I got rid of my car that the agents knew about, you know, and I'm driving a different car now. It's like building my credit up. I'm good at my job. after the DA has seen like all this proof of my recovery, you know, he's talking about probation now. So I might not have to go back to prison. So recently, like I celebrated a year. It was a big deal, you know, because I've never had this kind of time before. I had a really good group of guys from the center. We all reached out to each other. We all hold each other accountable. You know, that's really all I got. I had all these fucking bullet points written down, like where I was going to like, and I, like, I catch myself looking at them, and then I'm like, oh, I don't fucking need them bullet points or nothing. You know, it fucking works. You know, like if I can do this shit, like anybody can, you know. For me, it was just like I had to go through all the shit that I went through in order for me to be at a spot where I can make this work and willing to give it a chance, you know. And when I had like such horrible consequences ahead of me, you know, the shit, like, you know, working these steps and doing the things that like Chris and my sponsor tells me to do has so much less consequences, you know what I mean, than the shit that I was looking at. And that's what my ideas got me. You know, it got me looking at like life sentences in prison. The consequences of working these steps are like having a big, cool life. You know what I mean? Like I can kind of like weigh the two out and it's a no brainer. So, you know, this is like a new life for me. It really works. You know, we can recover. It's really all I got, man.
That was awesome.
Good shit, bro.
That was amazing.
Jacob, that was awesome.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you. Awesome job, Jacob. Hope to see you tomorrow.
Hi, Beth.
Thank you.
Hey there. Good to see you.
Great talk, Jacob. Thanks for inviting me, man.